I'm Nick Harvey Doyle, an Ngunnawan man from the Northern Tablelands of New South Wales. The Yarn podcast is made on the unceded land of the Wurundjeri, Woiwurrung and Bunurong people. We'd like to acknowledge First Nations people as the first storytellers. We pay our respects to elders past and present. Always was, always will be, Aboriginal land.
From the Centre for Advancing Journalism at the University of Melbourne, this is The Yarn. I'm Thomas Phillips. In the throes of addiction, people can enter a time warp. The clock seemingly stops when cravings are met and dopamine floods the brain. But I'm not talking about drugs. I'm talking about social media. Heavy users can squander hours per day on TikTok binges, and the app's developers see this as a feature, not a flaw. This week, we're bringing you stories about how social media is rewiring our brains and reshaping real life. It's the third episode of Not Natural, a series about our ability to control nature. These stories were produced for the Science Gallery's new exhibition, Not Natural. It's open now and includes a listening station where you can hear work from our students. First up, Alexandra Harrop on how endless scrolling is keeping us up at night.
Before everyone got so addicted to their phone, sleeping issues was not that prevalent, but now everyone that you talk to, what's the first thing they do before they go to bed is go on their phone and scroll until they can fall asleep.
University-aged students are all saying the same thing. They can't get off their phone, they don't have a healthy sleep cycle, but they can't be bothered to change their routines.
Hi, I'm Christine, I'm 19. I feel like I don't really have a nighttime routine. 12 a.m. is probably the earliest, but definitely could be like 1 or 2, even 3, depending on what the night is.
My name's Ferg, I'm 19 years old. Nighttime routine will be go between a loop of scrolling through social media and then replying to back and forth somewhat meaningless messages.
I'm George and I'm 20 years old. I'd probably go to bed like 12 o'clock just on like Instagram, just scrolling like kind of mindlessly, which is pretty, like, I know it's bad, but I just do it anyway.
Okay, I'm Feeny. I'm nearly 21. I might watch a movie or I'll scroll on my phone, but there is a book sitting on my bedside table.
There is nothing natural about the electronic screen being the last thing our eyes see before we fall asleep. Blue waves come from artificial lights and backlit electronic screens which stimulate our brains and disrupt our sleep cycle. This sleep cycle, the body's circadian rhythm, is a 24-hour cycle that controls our body's essential functions such as sleep. For much of human history, this cycle was in line with sunrise and sunset, and the secretion of melatonin, a sleep-inducing hormone, occurred in the absence of light. This was thrown out of whack with the introduction of artificial light and made even worse with small electronic devices where the blue light is extremely bright and very close to our eyes.
I lie there feeling like the blue light is affecting my eyes. Yeah, it's not natural.
I feel like being on your phone and blue light can disrupt like your actual perception of how tired you are, especially if you're consuming media and getting a quick dopamine hit. That obviously keeps your body awake and there's an addiction.
Over time, constant exposure to blue light can damage retinal cells and cause vision problems such as macular degeneration. It can even go so far as to contribute to cataracts, eye cancer, and growths on the clear covering of the white part of the eye.
I've noticed like my eyes feeling a bit more dry and like not being able to focus on the screen as much because of that light.
And we barely even know the long-term effects yet, but there's no stopping the habits. Despite the problems, scrolling is just too easy.
It's just so easy and accessible. I think it's a habit for pretty much everyone now. I think it is a problem, and everyone knows it's a problem. They're just too lazy to do anything about it.
That was Alexandra Harrop. Next, brawny physiques on social media are normalizing steroids. Stephanie Monaco investigates the hidden dangers of this growing trend.
This guy right here, he's bringing pretty much all the qualities that you would want in a quote-unquote classic style physique. The same as Breon Ansley, who we saw just as we came to the broadcast here. Breon was phenomenal at the pre-judging, and I believe he's going to be battling it out for this guy for the title, I might say. And Danny Hester has a very loose grip on that title.
It's constantly in front of you, like people who are bigger, stronger, and I think that definitely has a big part in it in relation to like body dysmorphia. People see that and it sort of, I guess, like the same comparison to Thief of Joy, you want to get to that faster, and a lot of people aren't truthful about their consumption of anabolic steroids.
The pressure to be bigger, better, faster, stronger is only becoming more demanding. Nick Davies, a final year physiotherapy student and fitness influencer, tells us. With increased pressure from social media, we're seeing people from all different demographics illegally indulging in anabolic steroid use.
Big thing of it is people trying to be better, faster, and especially in high pressure environments, it's almost not seen as an easy way, but almost like something that can propel them.
However, all that glitters is not gold. Anabolic steroid users are often so blindsided by their results that they neglect the physiological and psychological consequences that getting quote-unquote jacked has on them.
Think of it almost like a drug. Like, people take drugs and they go, oh, I feel good. Then with steroids, there's not really, I guess, a come down from it. So people are looking at it, they go, oh, I feel good. And then they look at themselves in the mirror and they're like, I feel good, I look good. Almost erases consequences in people's minds.
What kind of steroids were dudes doing back then?
Basic. You know, you got, you know, your test, D-ball, it's just basic stuff.
What people don't think about is that things like your organs, like your heart, they're also a muscle as well. So when you're taking these substances, you're also increasing the size of it. When taking like these substances, they're blinded by what they think is the outcome. Big Mike at the gym, like massive. You don't know what he's doing behind the scenes, like how often he's going to the doctor, how often he's having his blood checked to monitor these symptoms of heart failure.
Those enormous triceps don't come without an enlarged heart, and those huge quads are not without sacrificing your liver. Our bodies are not designed to be pushed so far past their limits, for the unnatural effects of steroid abuse are not without unnatural consequences.
That was Stephanie Monaco. Many users present false versions of their lives online, but some influencers take it to another level. In our next story, Mia Spiteri reports on virtual influencers who don't even exist.
While we're all used to seeing celebrities on social media, you may have noticed that some rising influencers look a little too airbrushed online. It's possible that you've come across a CGI virtual influencer. Being computer generated, we can say that their existence is fake. However, their influence is very real. They wear the latest trends and interact with followers, but can they keep up with human creativity? I asked Dr. Tommaso Durante, a lecturer in media and communication at UniMelb, to explain more.
Technology is capable of randomly combining old ideas to create new ones. The result does not necessarily make sense.
Popular virtual influencer Shuju was created by fashion photographer Cameron James Wilson. Considered to be the world's first digital supermodel, her fame has not come without controversy. Shuju's appearance draws largely from the Princess of South Africa, a Barbie doll. Once it was revealed that Shuju was in fact a product of CGI design, Wilson was accused of digital blackface. Further, he's been criticised for taking opportunities from real black women in the industry while profiting from the allure of black beauty.
She made no mentioning of being a virtual human. She simply posted as usual and let the speculation be until she was Instagram's biggest mystery.
Virtual influencers transcend physical and geographical limitations. We don't have to fly them around the world, minimising carbon footprints and creating affordable and sustainable marketing campaigns. Durante says it's possible to mimic any condition of the natural world.
If God create man in his own image, if I can say that, we're able as human being to create computer, generate robots in our own image, which is something profoundly captivating.
While this is true, a lack of authenticity can lead to a lack of trust, particularly as virtual influencers have never tried the products that they recommend. With technological developments in AI inevitable, the possibilities for virtual influencers seem endless. It's likely that we haven't seen the end of virtual influencers, and won't for a while, as they're becoming a strategic tool for brands and social media. It's important to remember that what you see online, no matter how lifelike, isn't always as it seems.
That was Mia Spiteri. Dating apps have completely reshaped courtship norms. But does stigma about finding love online still persist? Ella Power-Bridger investigates.
It doesn't feel very natural.
In 2023, dating is different. More than half of those under 30 have used a dating app to find love. However, many still admit it can be unusual. I sat down with a handful of friends in their early 20s to unpack this modern dilemma.
I love Tinder.
I find it so fun.
I usually use Hinge, but sometimes I also use Tinder.
I only use Tinder at the minute.
I download and then download and delete dating apps out of boredom, to be honest.
Public pressure, but I just wanted to see if I could, if anything would happen.
A little bit of male validation.
I just wanted to chat to guys.
It does provide a way to like talk and meet people without having to like put that much effort in or having to actually go out to places and actually like seek a relationship.
Just for fun.
While many use dating apps for a casual fling, statistics show roughly 70% of couples now meet online, with more than 20% ending up engaged, and this rate is rising. But there remains a stigma around finding love in cyberspace. Why?
I don't think it's natural, but I feel like there's a lot of stigma around it, which annoys me.
I mean, it's not nearly as natural meeting someone online because you're kind of just like just getting feedback and going yes or no.
You can just feel very superficial.
I do think I get a bit like, oh, when someone's like, how did you meet this boy? And I'm like, oh, Tinder.
The first time you actually engage with them is through your phone.
A lot of the idea of it being unnatural is because people put on a very, like, the best idealised version of themselves out there.
Everyone's ideal world is that you'd meet them face-to-face first. I think because our parents didn't have it.
Everyone believes that, like, with romance, it's like you were destined to meet at this one place, and if you do it in a non-natural way in the sense of online dating, it's like it's not destiny, it's more you're making your own destiny.
In the end, the only real difference is how people first communicate. So is that to say that it is technology that is unnatural? Technology might be man-made, but human connection will always be a force of nature.
If you meet someone through there's nothing unnatural about that. It's two people talking who have similar interests who are obviously attracted to each other.
I would 100% be content finding a long-term partner on any app. The point of the app is to have that mindset in the long term, and I think if it happens, it happens.
Guy I'm talking to right now, I met on Tinder. I'm not going to pretend to have met them at a bar and it be this, like, beautiful love story when, like, the way he treats me is enough of a love story.
That was Ella Power-Bridger. A massive thank you to producers Alexandra Harrop, Stephanie Monaco, Mia Spiteri, and Ella Power-Bridger. The yarn is from the Centre for Advancing Journalism at the University of Melbourne. It's produced on the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. Our executive producer is Louisa Lim. I'm Thomas Phillips. See you next week.